Blog Talk Radio. Another fine show brought to you by the Law of Attraction Radio Network. The Law of Attraction Talk Radio is the radio show that is changing the world through science and spirituality as we realize that our well-being and our happiness is through our own thoughts. The Law of Attraction Talk Radio, the Jewels. Welcome to Law of Attraction Talk Radio. I'm Jewels from beautiful and hot Southern California. This hot temperature has me dreaming about the upcoming cruise, so I will be talking about that a bit later. But tonight we have Roxanne Emmerich, who wrote the incredible best-selling book, Thank God It's Monday. Wow, the fact that it's such a huge bestseller tells me that the shift is occurring. I am so excited to have Roxanne on tonight. She's going to give us a wealth of knowledge about how to shift our attitude surrounding business and work to get the very best results for us and for the company. This is exactly what we need to hear right now, so stay tuned. You're going to love it. And now let's listen to tonight's sponsors. Susan Kincaid, author of Financial Freedom on a Dollar a Day, wants to introduce you to her very simple strategic system for making money using 7 steps to enlightened wealth. Suzanne loves to share her experience on how anyone can make money. It's so easy. Contact Susan Kincaid today at investworks.net. That's investworks.net. Access your forgotten abilities to create a happy and joyful life that is filled with abundance through the Law of Attraction Radio Network. Listen to shows that will inspire and uplift your consciousness, required to fulfill your desires, by downloading your favorite shows to your MP3 player. Join us at loaradionetwork.com. That's loaradionetwork.com. Okay, we're back. Hey, let's talk about this incredible cruise coming up. One of my favorite people, Larry Michael of Match Matrix Show on Law of Attraction Radio Network, of course, has just popped in to say hi. Hi, Larry. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Great. I'm getting so excited about this cruise, aren't you?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, I know Match Matrix is really playing a vital role in the cruise, so tell us what you have got planned for all of us.
Well, there's two things going on, maybe more than two, but there are two things. One, we're going to be doing a seminar. I'll be doing a seminar talking about energetic compatibility. We'll be talking about what are the hidden mysteries that cause relationships to go sideways, and what are some of the hidden mysteries that actually cause relationships to work at the most connected and loving and joyful level. So that will be what my topic is about in our conversations, or at least in our presentation. But in addition to that, what we're going to be doing is we're going to have information on everybody that comes on the cruise that's coming in through Law of Attraction Radio Network, and we will be aligning everybody for compatibility. Now, what I mean by that is energetic compatibility. So we'll be taking a look at how people really connect at the deepest level for communication and for the speed that they process information, and they're going to experience a level of connection to people that is beyond anything that I think they've ever experienced before.
Wow, it sounds like we could be making some lifelong friends from this cruise. I love it. Now, the energetic analysis that Match Matrix will be performing is just not for people looking for the perfect mate. It's for coworkers and relationships.
There are people that are looking for mates. We do have a way to address that. But in this case, what we're focused on, at least for everyone that's on this cruise, is not particular to whether they're in a relationship, a romantic relationship or not. They certainly have relationships, existing relationships, hopefully with loved ones. And if they're in a romantic relationship, they can look at that. But they have relationships with their parents, with their sisters, with their kids, with their coworkers, and it impacts all of those.
So basically, we're going to get an understanding of our energy that makes up us so that we can understand how to get along with people better, right?
Absolutely. Well, here, how's this sound to you? If you could appreciate, acknowledge, and honor everyone that you encounter that's important to you and be able to release yourself from guilt, blame, or resentment, how would your life change?
Well, I'd be happier, and I'd be twice as effective.
Well, that's what we're going to do.
Well, I guess I better reserve a front row seat for me because I really need this. Hey, by the way, how are you and Frank enjoying your show?
Oh, we're having a blast. We're having a lot of fun. We interviewed Debbie Ford last Monday, and that if someone has not heard that show, they have to go listen to it. It was spectacular. And we're going to have some incredible guests on the show this coming Monday. It's just Frank and I, and we're going to do something we do every couple weeks. We're going to let people call in, and we're going to talk to them live on the air about their relationships, candid and direct and as eye-opening as you can get.
Boy, I can tell you, it's a great show. So tune in every Monday night at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern to hear Match Matrix on Law of Attraction Radio Network. Thanks, Larry.
Hey, Jules.
Yeah.
Have a great weekend.
Thank you. And hey, that reminds me, if you haven't signed up for this fantastic cruise that will literally change your life and the way you think about prosperity, about relationships, about yourself, then don't wait a minute more. Come on, sign up. If you need help, give me a holler. I'm right there for you. We'll work out something. We'll make sure that you can come aboard. But you do not want to miss this most exciting, wonderful way to bring about transformation. Next week on Law of Attraction Talk Radio, tune in to hear internationally known spiritual leader Mary Mammon Morrissey as she fills you up with pure inspiration. She's terrific, and I can guarantee you're going to feel so wonderful after listening to the show, so don't forget to tune in. So let's get on with tonight's show with Roxanne Emmerich. Roxanne's new book, Thank God It's Monday, reached and maintained the position as number one on Amazon business bestseller list and made Wall Street Journal's bestseller list all within its first week of release. This book and Roxanne has been endorsed by all the well-known people such as Ken Blanchard, Jack Canfield, etc., etc. But truly what this book represented to me is that we are now in the throes of changing the way we think about doing business. Gone are the days of the evil corporate empire that doesn't care about employees. And gone are the days when we just go to work expecting to earn just another dollar. There's something new, and you are going to be part of it. It's very exciting, and we can thank Roxanne for putting all of this into words that we could absolutely understand. Welcome, Roxanne, to Law of Attraction Talk Radio.
Thank you for having me, Jewel.
Roxanne, I love the title of the book, Thank God It's Monday. This kind of represents a total shift in attitude, doesn't it?
Oh, yes. I think most of us have had those Thank God It's Friday vibes throughout our lives for a good chunk of our lives. In fact, most people, when they first started their first job, were excited, and they couldn't wait to go to work, and they were pressed up, and shoes were shined, and then within about 2 weeks, they discover they work with a bunch of dweebs who are shooting wildly for mediocrity, and so their vision of being an extraordinary, creating a great result in the workplace goes away, and they start shooting wildly for mediocrity, too, and then 20 years goes by. And so I wrote this book to help people get that new job feeling back again and to have everyone in the organization get it back at the same time and keep it, because work's supposed to be fun. It's supposed to be fulfilling. It's supposed to be something that fills our boat as opposed to drains us and sucks us dry every day.
You just mentioned having fun in the office. How in the heck do you have fun in the office? Please give us a scoop on this.
Well, fun is not frivolous. It's a huge bottom line issue. In fact, during times like this, only the fun survive. You know, now we've got, with all the layoffs, you got twice the workload with half the friends, and so people are kind of all frayed and freaked out about what to do next. And you know, the reality is that culture is the leading provider, leading predictor of future profitability and growth of an organization. And culture is that fun, that playfulness, that aliveness, that bring-it-on attitude. You know, because most workplaces, it's kind of like, oh, do I have to do that? And they see everything as just additional work as opposed to, wow, I get to be a part of that. Wow, I get to learn something new. Wow, I get to go make a difference for a customer. And so it's about getting people back focused on customer success as opposed to customer satisfaction, because life gives to the givers and takes from the takers, and the world has a perfect accounting system. And so I'll give you some examples, Jill, if you want to go there.
Sure.
Of business after business who have huge turnarounds in their financials as a result of a one-day intervention where people come alive again. You know, we had a bank we worked with years ago in the state of Tennessee that had not grown more than 2% a year for 10 years in a row. And within 30 days of this kick-butt kickoff that I described in the Thank God It's Monday book, they had a 35% annualized growth. And subsequently, they have, you know, had, you know, 44% increase in profit 1 year. And, you know, every year, just huge increases in growth and profitability. Right now, when the banking industry is talking about a $599 billion losses this year, the banks that are currently working with us, the vast majority of them are having record quarters and record years without exception. So, you know, it's a huge bottom line issue, and it's just like Southwest Airlines. I mean, here's a company that for 30 years they were the top performing stock. Didn't they get the memo that they should be filing for bankruptcy every few years? And so, you know, I don't care what's going on out there with the recession, what's going on in here within your organization and within the mindsets of your people really dictates whether or not people get to keep their jobs and love their jobs.
Now, that's very interesting. Collective consciousness of the workplace can make or break a business.
I just received an email yesterday that just warmed my heart from one of my clients. They've had this woman who, even though they were really trying to move this culture change through the organization, they had this one woman who just was so miserable all the time, and they just didn't know if she'd ever get it. And they're all reading the book in unison together, and so the whole organization is all reading it at the same time. And they read a couple of chapters at a time, and they talk about it in their morning huddles. Well, this particular Monday morning, when they're sharing all the different things that they had, you know, gotten out of it, this woman said, "You know, the part I like the best in the book was the chapter where they talk about how you choose your attitudes." She goes, "I never thought about that before. I never thought I could choose my attitude." And she said, "I have hated Mondays working here. In fact, I used to get miserable Sunday nights just knowing what was coming." And I read this book, that part of the book, 2 weeks ago, and now I chose to decide to love being here. And you know what? I'm loving Sunday nights again. I'm having a ball coming to work. And apparently the whole place just went nuts as they cheered in unison because the light bulb went on. And, you know, the vast majority of humans right now are so disgruntled and so miserable at work, but not understanding that if they go someplace else, same circumstances, and so you have to change it from the inside and start being, you know, good to the people around you, great to customers, and the joy will come back to you.
Well, Roxanne, you just empowered a whole bunch of people here, because little did they realize that they could change their attitude towards their work. It's something that people just don't think is possible. So that's really a great message.
Well, it goes with your law of attraction theme too, Jules, is, you know, when people begin to understand that they attract abundance into their lives when they're of a mindset of giving, everything changes for them. One of the concepts I cover in the book is that life gives the givers and takes from the takers, and the world has a perfect accounting system. That is kind of the mantra of the Thank God It's Monday concept that we teach is, stop being focused internally and start having a hoot, making a difference for other people. And then just see how much joy and money comes your way. And so, you know, part of the law of attraction is when you're in that space of just, let's go do good, let's go do good, let's go do good, let's get those behaviors happening that just make a difference and we feel good about ourselves because we're adding value, then, you know, you don't have to participate in the recession. That's for other people.
Oh, I love it. Love it. Roxanne, your book is full of examples on what we can do when we're in certain situations. There's one in particular that you were talking about, a CEO who is only worried about the bottom line. And I know that there's many out there who are in that situation today. What's your advice on that?
I've had CEOs who have said to me, you know, Rox, after you did this work with us, my job has changed. I used to spend 80% of the time behind my desk and looking at reports and analyzing things. Now I have other people do that for me and bring that information to me, because what I'm doing now is going and creating profit and growth by being with the people and letting them know, you know, what matters and making sure that these things that we say we're going to do, that we're getting about making that happen. And, you know, one of the challenges that we have is that, you know, how do you get people lined up to go in the right direction and get the fire in the belly?
Yeah.
Because there's a whole lot of lack of the fire in the belly right now. And, you know, I think when we look at things, we have to ask ourselves, okay, where does this recession come from? Obviously, there's all kinds of funky things in the economy that were, you know, that were driving it. But at the core of why aren't businesses making money while some are, we have to take a look at that and go, okay, what's the core issue here and how do we shift through that? So as a CEO, when I do a program every year, Jules, called Permission to be Extraordinary. I have two different sessions that I run. One is just for CEOs and presidents, and the other one is for top executives. And in those sessions, one of the things that I'm teaching them is that they can turn around their company, but it comes from the inside out. Leadership is not a position, it's a way of being. And so when people are truly a leader, they look at the unreasonable and say, bring it on, let's go make that happen. Let's just be unreasonable and make that happen. And so they get people to step beyond that. And so, you know, one of the worst things that can happen right now during a recession is I see so many organizations contracting. Oh, let's cut more expenses. Well, great, you can cut your expenses right out of business. You know, what you really need to be doing is making more profit and making more revenue. And that's the part that when everybody's head is in the sand and nobody's getting it, there's trouble everywhere.
So what I'm hearing you say is that business now has to change their attitude of making value their top priority to their customers. Is that right?
Yes. It was a great book that was written many, many years ago by a guy by the name of Wallace Wattles. He was a retired Methodist pastor who lived in a mining town that where the mine had closed. And, of course, everybody went into this whole poverty consciousness thinking it was the end of the world. And he talks in his book, it's called The Science of Getting Rich, which is a rather odd title for a book by a Methodist pastor. But in his book, he talks about a concept called the 10 times multiplier. And what he says is always give 10 times more value than the cash you receive and people will beat a path to your door. Well, I think that's brilliant. And I think very few people get that concept. Everybody thinks, oh, I give you a half a cup here and you give me a half a cup back. Mm-hmm. And everybody wants to do that even transaction. But the power of giving this massive amount of value up front, so clients go, wow, you know, if that's how you're going to take care of me, gosh, I have a couple friends that should come to you. Gosh, I should bring more of my business to you. But until we have that mindset of being a giver as opposed to being a taker, we can't create that abundance.
Wow, this is great. So wouldn't you say that this recession is really a huge blessing because it's actually forcing all business to kind of reframe the way that they have been doing business for the last 40 or 50 years?
And it's a good thing. You know, it's teaching us all to be much more wise. It's teaching us all to learn some life lessons. You know, it's been easy street for a really, really long time where business was just so good for everybody. Mm-hmm. But that's not a reality that you can sustain forever. And so the great thing about recessions is it teaches you how to be smart and how to be wise and how to move ahead with those things. I have a quote in the book that I love by Aristotle Onassis. And he says that the secret of business is knowing something that nobody else knows. Well, that's a really interesting thing to ponder. And so what he's really saying is, and I think where he's getting at is something at a deeper level. It's not like, how do I do inventory better than somebody else? It's not that. It's what are the core concepts and core principles that really, really drive a business? And, you know, when you think about before the recession, everybody's marketing by sending their four-color glossy brochures and doing the billboards and very expensive things that say, see me, buy me. Well, at the very core of that concept, something was wrong. Because what really works in marketing and has always worked in marketing is when you give a lot of value and you make an extraordinary experience happen, then people beat a path to your door. It's called magnetic marketing. I mean, let me draw a picture in your mind. Imagine walking into a bank, and as you walk in, all you see is parts. I always call it parts disease. You know, nobody's looking up, no one's making eye contact, no one shows that they care, and you know, so it isn't a pleasant experience. They don't know your name, they're not very helpful, and they do the transaction. Now imagine walking into Bank B. And as you walk in, they say, hey, Jules, great to see you. How are you doing today? Hi, Jules, how are you? Hey, Jules, come on over here. I'll take care of you today. And then they start to ask you, so what's going on with you? Oh, that's great. So how's your business coming? Oh, that's fabulous. Adding more employees? Oh, interesting, great. And are you going to be moving to the office soon? That's interesting. So how many employees do you think you're going to be getting up to soon? Okay. When you move, are you going to be moving your family? I mean, after a few questions, they're going to recognize the need for 5, 6, 7, 8 new different accounts. And they're going to be able to create massive value. And as you walk out the door, they'll be saying things to you like, Jules, great to see you. Come back again tomorrow, Jules. Call me anytime, Jules. Here's my personal line. Whole different experience. That's the kind of bank that's making money right now. The kind of bank where they're just moving things around the balance sheet, they're not winning right now. And it's the perfect metaphor for all business.
What a valuable lesson. So, what we're learning here is, one, you've got to create value, and two, we've got to appreciate what we're doing.
They're enjoying what they're doing, and everybody who's listening can too. In fact, if people go to the thankgodit'smonday.com site, I have free audios every Monday morning, and we used to charge our clients quite a bit of money for this, but now they're free to everyone, and because we just want this to be viral, send it to your friends, send it to anybody you know who doesn't like their job, anybody who needs to shift the profitability of a company or grow a company, and have them listen to it with their teammates every Monday morning. It only takes a minute or two. And our clients are saying to us things like, wow, those just really shift everything. So I cover like basic things that nobody gets, like how to not give excuses ever again in the workplace, not how to not allow them. What do you say instead? What do you say if somebody gives you an excuse? But it takes a minute or two, and my clients tell me that after they listen for a minute, they all sit there quietly staring each other in the eye saying, oh, yeah, we have to work on that one. And the reason that I have these real-life stories is I've owned a lot of businesses. I've been doing nothing but working with helping businesses advance for 30 years, specializing in this for 20 years. And so I know what the problems are in businesses and how to get them turned around. And so what I do is I just make everything simple for people. And so we ask for people to listen to those in teams, and at the end of listening, that they just make commitments to each other about what they'll do differently.
What a fantastic idea. This is just great. So you wanna like your job, you wanna shift the attitude of everyone, then get the Monday morning message at thankgoditsmonday.com. This is just phenomenal.
Yeah, they're going over really, really well. We have just hundreds of people signing up, but sometimes I watch throughout the hour how many people are signing up. They're catching on, and they're going, it's going like growing like wildfire because people are sending it on to their friends and moving it through.
Talk about creating a value. This is phenomenal. Now let's talk about some of the examples you give in the book about the energy vampire. I thought this was really interesting.
Yeah, an energy vampire is that person who, when you come in on Monday morning and you're all restored after the weekend, where you're thinking about, ooh, I'm going to do this project, and ooh, I'm going to get caught up with this thing, and oh, I'm going to go take care of that client this way, and you're in this phenomenal mood. An energy vampire is the person who, as you walk in on Monday morning, just by walking by them, they suck you back dry again. And we've all been the energy vampire, so let's just forgive ourselves everything from the past because everybody's done it. These are the excuse makers, the whiners, the gossips, the eye rollers, the passive aggressives.
The victims.
The victims, you bet. Okay, these are the folks who have mastered these skill sets of being able to suck everybody around them dry. And You know, and here's the problem is people think, oh, if I just leave this company and go someplace else, I won't have any more energy vampires. Well, yes, you will. There are humans around. And so you better learn to show them how to stop sucking you dry right where you are. And so in the book, I give a lot of practical tips, and also in the thankgodsmoney.com audios, we have a lot of practical ideas about how to make that stuff stop. So when people are doing those kind of things, whether it's gossiping or whining or victimhood or whatever that would be, here's what you do and here's exactly how you do it without having to go into rocket science. It's like, how do you, what's the fastest way from A to B to make those behaviors stop? Let me give you an example. I find the whole concept of gossip to be one of the most atrocious and abusive things that happens in a workplace because you can't thrive in a workplace when that's allowed. Usually they're gossiping about the management team, although they'll gossip about everyone. It takes away management's ability to manage and to lead because nobody knows who to trust. But people who gossip against a leader will gossip about their coworkers as well. It's just a matter of time because gossip comes from a place of people not feeling good about themselves and thinking if I put somebody else down, I will feel better about myself. Of course, it never works. But that's where gossip comes from. So when we go in and do a butt kickoff, which we describe in the book, we ask people to make commitments. And so one of the things I do is I explain, okay, let's imagine that you have a problem with Tom. Who do you talk to about it? Joe and Pete and Julie, but everybody but the dude that you have the problem with. And that's because we learn our conflict resolution skills in the fourth grade. And so what we ask people to do is from now on when you have a problem with somebody, only talk to them and ask for what you want in a specific way. No whining. Just go up and say, hey, Joe, when you do this, it creates this mess. From now on, can you do this instead? Do I have your commitment? How easy is that? And so what I ask people to do is to look each other in the eye and look me in the eye and raise their hands and say, are you committed to having zero tolerance for gossip? You will not listen to it. You will not say it. Are you in? Are you in? Are you in? Are you in? And when we go through that experience, I literally will be looking out into a group and I'll see the tears coming down the cheeks. And people will come up afterwards lined up saying, I've hated working here for 18 years and I can't wait to go to work tomorrow. You know, people, you may as well bring baseball bats and beat the heck out of each other when you gossip because you can stitch up after that, but there's no repairing the words and the damage from gossip. And so we ask people to make a pledge to that and to be completely disallow it. And it is a hard, hard thing to bust. There are people who feel very bad about themselves and they need to put others down.
Yeah, there's the law of attraction in action. If you're gossiping about someone else, you can bet your bottom dollar that they're going to be gossiping about you. So what you put out, you're going to get back.
Yeah, and not only that, you feel worse about yourself. You cannot feel slime to yourself when you slime somebody else. The slime goes everywhere. There's a guy that we have come into a course, this Permission to Make Extraordinary course that we offer for executives every year, and we do this little process where we show how energy is impacted in the people around us by the behaviors and the words and the thoughts that we have. And so, like, we'll do these double-blind studies, and we'll look to somebody in the room, and we'll say, okay, think a bad thought about so-and-so. And so that person is then thinking a bad thought, and then we do a little test, an energy test, and boom, you know, everybody goes low energy. And we actually have machines that test it, and so they know, oh, this is real. This is really real. And people are like, wow, okay, I get it. I think a bad thought about somebody, my energy goes down. Somebody thinks a bad thought about me, my energy goes down. By being in the area where one person is thinking a bad thought about somebody else, my energy goes down. So it's more than just the karma of it. It's the immediate impact of just not staying in a place that's wholesome.
Wow, that's something that we need to be reminded on a daily basis. Tell me about your kick butt kick off program that you have in your book.
You know from the name, it's just not your normal little meeting. For 20 years, I've been doing something called a kick butt kick off. And what that is, it's a one-day transformational event. And people are always saying things like, oh, it takes 2 years to change the culture of an organization. It doesn't. It takes a day. I mean, it takes a day to radically shift everything, the attitudes, the behaviors, the profitability, the growth, everything. For 20 years, people will say to me the day after, it's a miracle. Customers are lined up saying, what just happened here? It's a miracle. Well, it's not a miracle. It's a system. And so in the Thank God It's Monday book, I explain the system. And the key is to work the system because it's all about getting people all together and to get them to cut the crap and get busy doing what they're supposed to be doing. And that's about as clear as I can make it. But it's enough of all, you know, the dysfunctional behaviors have to go away. So it's about making commitments to make that happen. It's about having a clear picture of what extraordinary looks like and get everyone on the bus saying we all want to be a part of that. And so we do this visioning process, and in this visioning process, we take 4 minutes, literally. People could take 4 years to do this, but we take 4 minutes. At the end of 4 minutes, they have a vision where they have goosebumps in their kneecaps. They're so excited, going, man, we could do that. Wouldn't that be something? And so what we're showing them is how to articulate what's in their hearts that would make them feel like, man, if we could do that as a work team, we would rock. And it's so funny when I do that system, people are literally standing on the chairs. Often I have to like pull them back down, saying, "Oh, be safe, you know, come back down here." They go nuts when they find out when they come up with this vision because they so want to be a part of something grand. No one wants to shoot wildly for mediocrity for the entirety of their life. There is no one on this planet who said, "Oh, I came here to be average." And so when people start to come alive again with the possibility of being great and knowing what great looks like and saying, hey, we're going here, and if I you know, run amok here, clean me up and, you know, dust me off and turn me back in the right direction again. I want to be a part of something great. So that's what the Kick Butt Kickoff is all about. It's a one-day process where we work with the managers in the afternoon, and then every employee from the board of directors on down in the org chart in the evening, and it's all about waking up and making commitments.
Shifting your organization in one day. That's wonderful information. You state that you want all of the employees to become leaders, which is great. But what do you do with that boss then? Where do you draw the line? Where does the boss lead and where do the employees lead?
Well, here's the fun thing is it's really all the same. You know, people just want to make their organization successful. And so, you know, what I hate to hear is when people say, oh, management would never listen to me. Those are just the worst words. Those are so crazy. That's such a victim mentality. It's so unhealthy. No one would ever listen to me. Oh, I'm sure that he wouldn't want to listen to my idea. She'll never pay attention to me.
Oh, you're saying that it's not the boss's fault. It's our perception of the boss.
Yeah, that personal accountability thing, ooh, that just kind of hurts, but it's real. So suck it up and just move through it, you know? And so stop playing this, ooh, woe is me, I'm a victim of the world, and step up, and if you have an idea for the manager, which you should because you're not hired for your resume or your past job performance, you're hired for your ability to see what isn't there and make it happen. That's why you have a job. Everything else can be done by a machine these days. And so you better be having ideas and bringing them to leadership to get them approved and move through. And so let me give you two different scenarios, Jules, of two different ways that people can bring an idea to their manager to either get it happening and feel great about it or to really create a train wreck. So let's do the train wreck first. Okay, train wreck approach is you go up to your boss and you go, well, you probably don't even want to hear about this, but we got a problem. And the problem is this and this and this, and what are you going to do about it? Okay, now, this is not going to get you promoted. This is not going to get you a raise. This is not going to bode well when performance review time comes. If instead you go to your boss and say, hey, I'm recognizing an opportunity for a breakthrough. I noticed that we had this issue over here with how we're doing such and such. And so what I've done is I've taken the liberty to study, you know, different options of how we could fix this. And so here are three options I think are probably the best. Option A looks like this. It would cost this amount and take this amount of time to put up in place. Option B would cost this amount, would create this kind of result, whatever. And option C is whatever. Based upon everything I've looked at, my recommendation would be option B, and I would be happy to spearhead that. Well, not only will they have you be spearheading that, but you're going to be having the CEO's job in no time flat. And so I don't buy into this belief system that somebody can't be leading an organization. The only thing between someone and running an organization is their ability to see what isn't there and make it happen and step up. Mm-hmm. There is so much leadership in every one of us that is so untapped because of the victim roles we're playing out. And I get up every day going, okay, that's my job. Help people get over their victim mentality and get them moving.
Okay, let me get this straight. There's no such thing, then, as leaders and followers. Is that right?
Okay, so let's say the building you're in right now is burning, okay? I would wager to bet that, let's say you have 500 people in your office building, that a whole bunch of people are going to be going, hey, get out of here now, grab this, grab that, go, 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 get down the stairs, move it. Suddenly people are stepping up and being leaders because they have to, okay? What people aren't getting is that in life, it's always that way. I mean, there's always, the world always works better when more people are stepping up and leading. And so leadership is not a position, it's a way of being. And I encourage everyone to get that and get that in every cell of their body. Step up. If you were running the joint, what would you be doing? Well, then make the suggestion, but give it in a legitimate and kind way that doesn't say, oh, you jerk, you, why don't you get this stuff? I can't believe my manager's so stupid. I mean, that's not going to go over well. Give it in a way that says, I really care, and I'm noticing that there's this deficit over here, and I'm thinking that, well, if we just did this and this and this, we could get this thing fixed. Could I get some permission to move ahead with this? What would I have to do? And if they say no, just say, okay, and then come back the next day. You know, I've been thinking about this. Here's a slight alteration to this. Could we get approval on this? If they say no, come back the next day and go, okay, I've been thinking again. I did some more research. Here's what I recommend. Could we get an approval on this? And you just keep dripping and dripping and dripping until they go, okay, get it done.
Wow.
It's just like being a teenager, right? you kind of have to be deaf to the answer, and then you get what you want. And so that's what leadership looks like.
Let me give you something to play with here. Say that there's two employees, or actually there's a bunch of employees, but one employee is actually going and taking long lunches, like 2 and 3 hour lunches, and the company is not seeing this, although it's beginning to hurt the reputation of the company. What does the other employee do? Do they confront the employee? Do they go to the boss? When it's really none of their business to begin with.
I'm so glad you asked. Because what I'm going to tell you is very counter to the traditional thinking about things. So let me just start off by saying that this is just the exact opposite of what they taught you in business school. So just know that.
Okay.
So, you know, what HR will tell you is, okay, well, go to your boss and have your boss talk to their boss, and then their boss will talk to them. Well, think about this for just a second. If you do that, by the time you tell your boss will be at least slightly confused on the facts because they weren't there. They're now talking to that person's boss, who will slightly confuse the facts even more, who will then talk to the next person, who will slightly confuse the facts even more. And so now their boss is talking to them about something that doesn't even make sense, and that person is so mad at you for bringing this up. Okay, what if instead, when that person isn't getting it, what if you pick up the phone and you say, hey, Joe, hey, when you do this, it creates this mess. Could you do this instead? Great, can I count on you? Well, what a healthy thing that would be. I just yesterday spoke to an HR group, and I said, okay, guys, put on your seatbelts here. I'm going to take you down a wild ride here because there's something that you've been buying into because it was in somebody's textbook who repeated it from a different textbook, who repeated it from another textbook. But I challenge you that when you hear this to tell me, does this make any sense at all? I mean, why would anybody think that this made any sense? And so how do you have function in a high-performing organization when you have to wait for all these different channels to be talked through, and then everybody's looking cross-eyed at everybody else because, you know, they just got beat up by their boss for doing something they didn't even do because the facts got skewed by the time that went through everywhere. But if person A calls person B and says, you know, Joe, when you did this, it creates this mess. Can I request you do this instead, and do I have a commitment? Joe feels cared about. It's like, hey, Jan takes good care of me. If there's a problem, Jan calls and she tells me what she needs. I can trust her. And so this is uncommon sense.
So you're confronting someone, but you're doing it in a way that's not aggressive or mean.
Not only should it not be mean, but it should be loving. Years ago, I had an exchange student and I wasn't intending to have exchange students. I got a call one day in from a friend of a friend who was running a program for exchange students, and they found out that maybe I would someday consider an exchange student. So I get a phone call, and they say, hey, there's this young man coming over from this other country, and he has no place to live, and his family just said they wouldn't take him. And could you take him for 6 weeks? Well, you know, I mean, what kind of a heartless person would say no? So I said, okay, well, I've never had an exchange student, but let's give this a try and see how this works. And so he came, and, you know, his English was very, very poor, and I couldn't speak his language at all. And so we had a very difficult time communicating things like put the shower in the shower into the tub before you turn the water on, and so everything from the shower curtain not being where we're supposed to be, everything was challenging at first. And after about a month, his English got very strong, and we began to have some conversations. And he asked me one day if I would teach him how to make American food, and I thought I'd be happy to. And so I decided to make him a grilled cheese sandwich, and we were having a good time. And all of a sudden, I thought, oh my gosh, his body odor is just extreme. Somebody needs to talk to this kid. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I'm his host mom. You know, what am I going to do? Send him to school smelling like this? The kids will just completely rip him up alive. And so I finally got the courage up, and I said, hey, I'm noticing that there's a smell, and I'm just kind of concerned. I don't, you know, I'm wondering, you know, did you take a shower today? And he said, yes. And I thought, uh-oh. And then I said, well, did you change your clothes today and put fresh clothes on? And he looked at me funny. I said, well, how many days have you worn your shirt? He said, 4. And I went, oh, there it is. I said, from now on, you know, just put your T-shirts in the laundry when you finish, and they will magically show up about 4 days later folded. And he kind of laughed. And another month went by before his English got quite strong, and he said to me, Mom, thank you for telling me about that, because if I would have went to school smelling like that, the kids would have been very, very mean. I didn't know what was going wrong, but all the preservatives that are here in the American foods really cause you to smell funny here, and I didn't know how to deal with that. And I thought, gosh, you can tell somebody that they stink, and they can come back and give you a loving expression of gratitude for it.
Yeah.
So, but here's my point, is that people want to hear things when they're delivered in loving ways. And so how do you deliver something in a loving way so people really get, oh, this person cares for me and wants me to do better?
What do you do if a boss feels threatened by your brilliance or by your ability to get things done? That does happen.
Oh, that's a good question, Jules. we call that defensiveness, and defensiveness is a real cancer within an organization too. And people who are defensive, it usually comes from a place of just not feeling good about themselves and not having the self-esteem. And so so if I'm coaching you, Jules, and I'm saying, gee, Jules, I think you should wear blue instead of red, and you may think, oh, how dare she say that? She's hurt my feelings. You know what? She doesn't care about me. And so there'd be a defensiveness that would not allow for that information to come in. So here's my coaching and what I tell people to do to bring down the defensiveness. If you know you have someone who has some self-esteem issues and who, when coached, constantly tells you why you're wrong and won't take any of it in, one of the ways around it is to say before you start, hey, Jules, I have something I want to share with you, and I might be right and I might be wrong, but chances are that I'm not 100% either way, but I'm hoping to share something with you that even if it's 1% right that you might take in, that it may be of service to you. Would it be okay if I were to share that with you? And if so, would you take that in all the way?
Yeah, how can any reasonable person say, no, you can't share that with me?
Well, if they say no, go, okay, and then walk back and and then come back a second time and say, hey, there's something I really want to share with you. Would you consider being open to this? I mean, and the key is get permission to go first. But usually by the time you say, listen, I might be wrong, and could I talk all the way through without being interrupted, and would you would you consider it? Most people then understand that what they've just signed up for is an implied contract. And so what they've really said is, okay, I said I would do that, and so now I better do that. And so most people will have that happen. And I have found that with defensive people, sometimes when you give them the feedback, you know, you get your butt handed to you back pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But people at the core, good people, they oftentimes go home and they start to reflect and go, oh, man, that person was just trying to help me, and I just kind of ripped their head off, and that wasn't nice, and that probably wasn't good. And so, you know, usually at some level that goes in. Not always.
Yeah.
But all you can do is what you can do. And so, you know, what I ask people to do is watch how you hold people. If you hold somebody as somebody who will never, ever get it, then they never can. And sometimes you have to tell something to somebody 15, 20 times, and it still doesn't go in. But you're doing your part, and you're doing it with kindness and love, and you know, it might be the 21st time when it goes in, and won't that be great? And so just stay in that space of kind of going, I'm just going to be a stand for you and keep pushing you through this.
So, Roxanne, someone is listening to the show tonight, and they're discovering, wow, they've got massive problems in the office, and, boy, they sure would love to see the attitude shift. what can they do besides going out and buying about 10 copies and handing them out to employees that may not be receptive? What can they do?
Well, there's a whole bunch of things that they can do. There's several different avenues. Let me cover a whole bunch of them. One is, obviously, get a book for yourself, get a book for several of your team members. Some companies buy. I think the reason it's been hitting the New York Times bestseller list over and over again is I think companies are buying this in bulk. I think this is kind of like the new Who Moved My Cheese, where people go, hey, here's the thing, we want to have everybody get this together and make some agreements. So obviously that would be one option. Another option is to go to the thankgodsmoney.com site and sign up for the audios and have that come along with the book, and so that so there's an ongoing kind of thing happening. Another thing they can do is, in October of this year, we're doing something called Lead the Transformation on the 6th and 7th of October, where for 20 years we've been showing teams how to transform their workplace culture. All we're going to do for 2 days is talk to you about how do you take charge of your organization and get it turned around. And we have one price for one individual to come, and we have a ridiculously low price for you to send 5 people. And the reason for this is because we want to have you send 5 people so you can go back and do something with it. Not only will they learn how to transform their organization, but it'll be a personal transformation program as well, where when people come out, I've been doing something similar to this for one industry only for years and years and years, and people always walk out of that saying, okay, now I know how to go back and transform my company, but wow, my life is different. My life with my kids is different. My relationship with my spouse is different. I'm having a hoot at work. I'm creating success for myself. And so it's also a personal transformation, because you can't transform a company without transforming yourself.
How true is that? Great. Here's another scenario. Say you have an employee that has just a rotten attitude and that has been there for so long that the boss just, you know, is in a dilemma on whether to let him go or not. What do you do?
Oh, I'm glad you asked that question. I have a very unique solution that I kind of just created on the fly one day, and I've been teaching it for 20 years ever since, and I call it the conversation. And so it's a kind of a four-step process, but it basically goes like this. So let's imagine, Jules, that you have what we call the bad attitude, okay? So which is the bad attitude, but you have the bad attitude. So what do you do with someone who's got a bad attitude? You have the conversation. And that conversation needs to be, and in fact, it's on page 145 of the book. But it basically goes like this. I'm so excited about where this team is going, and my sense is, and I could be wrong, but my sense is that you don't share that excitement, and that's okay, because maybe this isn't your thing. But if this isn't your thing, you've got to go find your thing. So let's meet tomorrow about 2 o'clock. Let me know what you decided. Now, they're going to be looking at you like, whoa, what just happened here? Mm-hmm. And what you basically said is, listen, the happy bus has just backed up to pick you up, and you get to make a choice now. What you're essentially saying is, listen, clearly you've been choosing misery, but misery is a choice. You could have also chosen joy here, but you chose misery instead, and that's not working for you or for us. And you know, and we're looking out for you. I mean, if you're not going to be happier, it must be us. And so you need to go find your thing. And so this is not a I'm firing you conversation. This is a here's the line in the sand. If you're going to be here, then choose joy. But if you're not going to choose joy, then go someplace else and see if that place can do it for you. Now, here's the good thing about this conversation, Jules, is they go home and they realize, oh, gosh, you know, I have had about 13 jobs in the last 4 years, and they've all been dweebs everywhere I went, and maybe I need to take a look at me. And we've heard from so many of our companies that after they have this conversation with someone, that this person who had been kind of a low performer and creating all this chaos up until this point suddenly becomes like massively on fire, and they become their highest performers. I mean, this doesn't happen like just every once in a while. This happens more often than you can even imagine. Right. And the reason for that is having a bad attitude takes a lot of energy. I mean, you got to be whining in the break room. You got to be whining at the water cooler. You got to be whining in the meetings. This takes a lot of energy. What if you rechannel that energy to saying, what can we be doing? How can we do that? Who can I be in charge of that? I mean, so when people who manage the negativity in an office can have management skills. They have leadership skills. And so if you channel that around to a productive use, they are so thrilled, and everyone around them is just shocked, and it's a good thing. And I've heard so many people who have done that. And it's interesting, because once they make the shift, I never hear stories of that person going back, because they really, I mean, it's an instantaneous transformation when you have a conversation with people because they go, oh, I get it. I choose.
You know, I think that sometimes people don't even realize how far down the ladder they are until someone, particularly a boss, brings it up and says, hey, you have a choice to either be happy or miserable. So work can actually be a life-changing moment as well. So what do you do about the employee who's a naysayer? May not be negative about everything, but likes to put a damper on things.
Like a Debbie Downer from Saturday Night Live, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, those people do exist, and that's why we kind of set up some ground rules about how we talk. All you have to do is listen to people's conversation within an organization for about 3 minutes, and you know exactly how that organization is doing and where they're going. So, you know, in some places it's all that negativity, some places it's all whining, some places it's all excuses, some places it's all victimhood. Everything's archetypal, and when you get down to the core of it, once you figure out what their conversation pattern is and give them a different conversation pattern, you can get dramatically different results overnight. So what to do with Debbie Downer? Ground rules. So a ground rule for Debbie Downer or anybody who is, you know, constantly finding the negative thing is to suggest to them that from now on, Debbie, I want you using what I call advancing language, which means always talk about what can be done and not what can't be done. And so will you make a commitment that from now on you'll be asking me for what can be done and offering solutions? Now, of course, they'll go, rah, 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 well, here's what I can. No, Debbie, here's what I need from you as a commitment that, because when you bring these things to me that are negative, it really wears me out. It makes me exhausted. I can't even think straight, and I can't move it ahead. From now on, will you make sure that you present this in a positive? Wait, here's what I can. You've got to be kidding me. No way. This place is just negative. You know. Okay, I understand you, Debbie. I get that. And what I need from you is from now on, when you present things, to use advancing language and talk about what can be done. Do I have your commitment? Now, again, broken record. Because what you have to understand is Debbie is getting energy from the people she's sucking dry. She's an energy vampire by being negative all the time. And it puts her in a status that she's just kind of like, she's got her path. And she's normalized her path, and she doesn't even know there's a different way. So what you're showing her is, hey, there's a different path. Can we try that on? And can you make a commitment to stay on that path instead? And the key part is that they get addicted to their drama but then what am I going to throw a fit about? Well, you know, maybe nothing. You know, let's just try that on and for a second. Now, we'll want to hear your ideas. We really, really do, but we want to hear them in productive ways.
So, again, you're helping Debbie realize what she is actually doing to herself and to everyone.
Oh, yeah.
Roxanne, this is really great information. I do appreciate it so much. Is there a core message that you want to convey to everybody through your books and through your teachings? What would it be?
Well, it would be to take a stand to make something different happen. No more victim role. So be the leader. Get the book, get it for a couple of buddies, get in their hands, give it to your boss, not in a passive-aggressive, throw it on their desk kind of way and hope they discover it. That's going to not look good for you. But give it to your boss and say, hey, boss, I just read this book. You know, I think we could, and it's even explained in the book how to do this because there's a story of someone who took charge of saying, hey, there are workplaces where people get it. I'd like to see if we could be one of those. I'd like to try this system on. Can we make this happen? And so go to your boss and say, hey, I'd like to make these things happen. Can you read this along with me? And I'd like to help you take charge of making some of these transformations happen. And if they say, no, I'm too busy, I can't, whatever, say, great. Can I take you to lunch on Thursday? Sure. What are we going to do on Thursday? I'm going to read you the book. And so the whole key here is don't be a victim. Be a powerhouse. Just step it up and make it happen.
Great message. But what would happen if all of the businesses changed? Wouldn't that be the end of the recession as we know it?
Well, it's interesting. I was doing a strategic planning think tank with our clients, with all of our banking clients 2 years ago, and that's when the idea of this book came up, and my client said, gosh, Emmerich, will you just write a book on this that we can give to our business clients? Because then we wouldn't have all these bad loans. and I'm like, oh, okay. who would have thunk that 2 years later it's on the New York Times bestseller list for the second month, though? But I think that the timing is perfect because right now, who can afford in a recession that one out of every three payroll dollars is lost due to disengaged employees? I mean, who can afford that? Payroll is the number one cost for most businesses, and a third of that goes out the door. And, you know, what if you got 10% of that back? What if you got 30%? What if you got 50%? So it's no accident that these clients that we work with, we have clients that, you know, are just like, you know, fighting to keep going in some cases who just have this huge shift. And we have clients, many, many clients who are already in the top 5% of their industry when we start working with them who think that they're at the top of their game, who have this huge shift in performance. It's actually easier to get a huge shift with somebody who's doing well already. And so it's just no accident because culture is the leading predictor of future growth and profitability, and it's not that hard. It's not about making it into a two-year project. It's none of that. It's just it can happen fast, it can happen powerfully, and it can be sustainable.
Perhaps we need to be sending this book in bulk to perhaps cities, state, counties, federal governments.
That's interesting that you should ask, but I can't tell you how many people have said, can we just get this in the government's hands? So, in fact, years ago, back when I lived in Wisconsin, I was an advisor to Governor Tommy Thompson at the time, and our job was, there were a couple of us who were the top, they identified as being some of the top business leaders in the state of Wisconsin. So it was the guy who was the head of Blue Cross Blue Shield, the guy who was the head of the largest bank holding company, and our job was to come in and reinvent state government. And I'll never forget sitting in a meeting one day, and the guy who was running Blue Cross and Blue Shield, his first name was Tom, and we're looking at each other, and all of a sudden he says, Roxanne, look. And he says, what do you see? And I said, I see people who have no excitement about being here. This can't be good. And he said, that's it exactly. He said, here we are, we're working on procedures and, you know, policies and whatever, but until they get this workforce caring about being here, none of this is going to matter. Yeah, and there are a lot of good people in government who are really standing, and it's hard for them to be around those who don't want to make the big difference, who do just want to have a job and put in their time and punch the clock. But, you know, when you think about the amount of money that we're spending in taxation right now to support our government, we need people on fire who are really turning around ROI. And if we don't do that, what will that say for the state of economy for our future?
And this is the perfect place to remind everyone that if you would love to have a copy of this terrific book called Thank God It's Monday, and if you'd like to give a copy of this to your boss or perhaps even send it to your government of choice, go to thankgoditsmonday.com. And while you're there, don't forget to sign up for your Monday morning message. Boy, that's really going to help a lot of people change their attitudes.
That sounds fine. In the meantime, have people follow me on Twitter and follow me on Facebook. I'll be sharing more information. As they come up with new ideas, I'll share that too. And what I want to create, Jules, is a movement far beyond Roxanne Emmerich, but a movement of people who go, listen, no need to have a recession, no need to be miserable at work, no need to have this personal depression. Let's get about bringing on the joy and bringing on the money because they come together.
Great, and the bottom line message is that we have the power to change and shift our attitude to be one of happiness. Thanks, Roxanne, so much for all of your efforts in changing the workplace and bringing back our personal power.
Thank you, Jules, and thank you so much for having me on the show today.
And to all the wonderful listeners, tune in next week for Married Man and Morrissey. And don't forget about the wonderful cruise where we're going to give you some more personal power. Have a great week. Bye-bye. Thank you for joining us on Law of Attraction Talk Radio with Jules. For more information, go to Law of Attraction Radio Network at lawofattracttalkradio.com or lawofattractiontools.com.